I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
It is, I see, am Jew, the most glorious Jew that ever lived, and your wrestling savior, and no, you can't teach that. Here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews, and this is episode 80, and on this episode, wow, we have a lot to go over. I'm going to, again, as I've already done before on multiple outlets, go over my personal review of being at WWE Battleground 2017 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So more on that, my final thoughts on that. We have G1 Climax 2017, which literally, as I am recording this, I just finished watching it. It actually started earlier than I thought. I was like, hey, it's 5:30, time to win G1 Climax. What? It's already over? But I finished watching that. I have more importantly with more of the more pop matches, but you know, we're gonna get into sort of that. So some spoilers. If you've not seen the finale and finals of the G1 Climax, that's coming up. And last but not least, we have our main review, and of course it's August, and well, it's the dog days of summer, and it also means that it is SummerSlam territory, and yes, that means we will be reviewing SummerSlam, and on this episode, I mean, we're going to be doing SummerSlam all month long, but you know, on this episode in particular, we're going back to 1994. Where Owens fought Brett in the cage for the title, and where the mystery of who the real Undertaker is was finally solved, and not by Lee Nelson. All that and more on this episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews, and whoo, it's good to be back. I had initially planned to have some episodes out in July. That didn't go well. July was a very weird month for me. A lot of things are going on. Personal, non-personal. But, yep, here I am, here with a new episode. Having to, you know, cover a lot of stuff. But, you know, even though this is going to be a jam-packed episode, we're going to have fun with it today. I actually don't have any laid-out notes for me to go. So, not that I'm going completely off the cuff, but you know, I am going to my memories and by imagination. No, not really, but you know. Just wanted to say, imagination. I don't know why. Let's all say it again. Imagination. The very first thing I want to cover is, you know, at the end of July or near the end of July, I went to my first WWE event in 28 years. A little background for those. Even though I've been watching wrestling steadily since 1999, but had been a wrestling fan all my life, particularly when I was a little kid in the late 80s, early 90s, when I was really young, I was like 3, 4, 5, when I lived in California at the time with my father, who's the one who really got me into being a wrestling fan. And, you know, he took me to one event, and I will always remember the event. It was in Anaheim, California. It was, I don't know if the pond was built at that point, but it was the old Anaheim Coliseum, I believe, to where, and I remember at least the main event. I don't remember any of the other matches. I remember the main event, which was, it was Hulk Hogan versus Big Boss Man in a steel cage. Akeem the Afghan Dream was on the other side. And I remember it because Hulk Hogan's music hit and he didn't come out. Then it hit again and he did come out. I'm like, oh, there's something happened to Hogan, of course, being a little kid who was ultimate Hulk Hogan fan. And that was my first and last WWE wrestling event that I've ever gone to until last month. So, yeah. I went to WWE Battleground in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Got there pretty early, around 1, hanged out at the Xfinity Live Center. Watched the Phillies game, which was going on the same day. It was going on in the afternoon. The pay-per-view was at night. Sat there, watched the Phillies game. A number of wrestling fans had also come early, came into the center to eat lunch and stuff. Then around like 4 p.m., headed out to, the building, which was like a 5-minute walk away. I mean, it's, again, for those who don't know the Philadelphia area, it's called the Sports Complex, and literally right next to each other, you have a Bank of America Field, which is where the Phillies play. And literally right across the street from them is Lincoln Financial Field, which is where the Philadelphia Phillies play. And literally right across the street from Lincoln Financial Field is the Wells Fargo Center, where the Sixers and the Philadelphia Flyers play. So it's the sports complex. And literally right at the sort of light that's intersection of like those of the corners of all three, at least, I mean, they all have their own parking lots, mind you. Is the Xfinity Live Center. It's literally right across from the field. It's a bit more of a walk to, and it's actually connected to the parking lot of the Wells Fargo Center, but it's where people can go and gather and get food. There's a couple of it's literally inside, and there's several different establishments that are all connected that you can go to. There's like a sort of more country section that apparently has a riding bowl. There's a sports pub. There's individual things. You know, it's actually there where I finally got to try my first Geno's Philly cheesesteak, which was really good. I really enjoyed it. You know, which I guess the main part is, you know, the whiz, the cheese whiz. Of course, you know, which should be obvious, but, you know, I have a feeling I'm going to say the whiz, and I'm like, somebody whizzed on your cheesesteak? Or somebody like, wait a minute, the whiz? Like Michael Jackson? Like, he's on down the road. Come on in, he's on down the road. Don't you carry nothing that might be a load. Come on, he's on down the road. No, I'm not talking about either of those whizzes. I'm talking about Cheese Whiz, which I've never had at a cheesesteak, but tastes really good in my opinion. I was actually very happy to finally have one. You know, everybody always talks about Geno's, so, you know, it was good to finally have it. So I had that, came to the building, like I said, around 4. You know, in a way, it was very strange that there wasn't a big, tailgating. I don't know. I can't help but wonder if, a majority of the hardcore Philadelphia fans decided not to go to this pay-per-view, which is, I think, very strange. You know, you always hear about the Philly crowd and everything, but a very subdued crowd in a way. And mind you, this is me thinking back on it now and looking back on everything. It was a very hot day. And the reason I bring this up is one thing is throughout the entire event, the entire crowd just never seemed to get it. And, you know, it's one thing to sit there and say, well, they're not giving us a product that people like. But, you know, at the same time, and I've talked about this on Riftdown, I've talked about this on WrestleCast, it was competing chants. You know, you had different people trying to start the same chant over and being completely out of rhythm. And again, I'm not trying to make excuses for this pay-per-view, but I think one thing that I think particularly for people who watched it at home, because this is what I constantly hear, and there's issues with the results, and we're going to get into the results real quick. Well, not real quick from here, but we'll go over the results quickly, and I'll give my thoughts about the matches after I go over my experience. But it's like, I think people are missing that the crowd kept taking itself out of it, and it wasn't a, I think, true Philly crowd. And I think that's one thing that I regret about the pay-per-view. At least it's the most one that I regret, and that is that I was really hoping for that Philly crowd, you know, the Philly crowd, that horrible Philly crowd that, you know, makes it dangerous to go to a Philly wrestling match, you know. I was hoping for that, and I didn't feel like I got that. I'm like, wait a minute, where's this Philly crowd? You know, it's like going to either a Chicago or a New York crowd and it not being as wild as crazy as you see on TV. It's like, this seems like a letdown. But yeah, so yeah, the crowd wasn't the A crowd for this pay-per-view. This was definitely a more family-friendly crowd in a lot of ways. There were a lot of kids and everything. I had a bit of a scare with security. And I say security because I had brought a little camcorder camera. Because, you know, again, I've not been to a wrestling event in 28 years, you know, and you watch, you know, wrestling on TV, and there are tons of people with cameras, and I've seen little camcorders, and of course, they also film with their phone, and they use a lot of, you know, if you listen to when I talked about this on the WrestleCast, and they called me an idiot for this, to which my point is, you know, again, they use so much fan footage for phones on social media and everything. It's a bit hypocritical, if you ask me, but I don't mind that they ban cameras. That's not my issue. My issue is, in particular for those of us who maybe are going to our first event and don't know what we can or cannot bring, and we may be, coming from another state, therefore leaving, at 11 a.m. in the morning. It would be probably better for WWE to post what you can or cannot bring a couple of days before the event, as opposed to, at 2:30 in the afternoon of the event, so people know what they can or cannot bring. I'm just saying, I think it would make it easier for security. Not that there isn't going to be somebody trying to, you know, sneak in a camera or whatever. But, you know, and I say that again, the issue isn't that the camera's banned. The issue is I had no place to put the camera. I mean, I was able to, they allowed me to, as long as I kept it in my pocket, keep it in. But, well, live podcasting is awesome. Sorry, had an actual emergency call at that point in time. But, you know, but the show must go on. It's taken care of. So, where were we? I think, that's right. I was talking about, security and you know, them sending stuff so people know what not to bring ahead of time. So that would be good. But I went in. My seats, by the way, were to, like, if you're looking in, if you watch the pre-show, the camera to the pre-show, I'm to the right, not the direct right of the pre-show stage, but, like, if you were to turn the camera to the right and look up on that, like, the 100 section, which was the, not the ground floor, but the very next section above, it's the sort of those seats. You'd probably see. In fact, I think you do see me on the pre-show. There are several places where I think you can see me. On the pre-show, when you come back from a commercial where they're selling t-shirts, from other points, I think there's you can see me after the Sami Zayn Michael Kanellis match. You see me during the KO waiting for AJ. As I make the joke, John Cena's big black cock, or as I like to call it, or better known as the when the boom camera that served for his entrance blocks you from seeing me while Rusev is waiting for John Cena. So yeah, there are several places you can see me, but I sat down, drew up my seats. There was a slight issue I had with my seating right after the event got started. A couple people had actually sat in the wrong seat, and there was a woman who was actually about my size who actually was sitting right next to me, and I asked if I could, you know, take the end seat and switch with the person who was on the end, because, you know, it... Again, not blaming her, but I'm a big person, and I'm right in the middle of the row, so I was very thankful to be able to sit on the end, and, you know, everybody was very understanding. Again, I wonder if that was a more hardcore Philly crowd in a way, if maybe that wouldn't have been the case, but I'm very thankful that they were very understanding of, you know, again, my size and needing to be, because, you know, I'm big as a goddamn billboard. And that's completely my fault, but, you know, can't do anything about it at that time. So, very glad for that. The show, I had a very good time and very much enjoyed the show. I had a lot of fun. People kept asking about the Punjabi prison match. It was very hard to see. It depended on what part of the ring they were. Like, in particular, when they were... after they got out of the inside cage, when they were by the announcer table, that was definitely a lot more easier to see, especially considering you had the Sting brothers on one end of the cage, Orton at the top, and you could see it clear as day. It's when they were on the other side of the ring that it really became a problem, but when they were in the actual ring, it wasn't that bad, as I think people think. I think it probably would have been worse for those in section... the 200 and 300 sections, but for the 100 section wasn't bad, and I think it was a lot better for those who were sitting on the floor. So you had that, and well, I think this is the right time to get into the pay-per-view itself. The pre-show match between Aiden English and Ty Dillinger was very fun. Everybody was into it. I thought that was a very good opening match. Got things started. Then you had the absolutely excellent tag team match between the New Day and the Usos, where the New Day captured the titles. That was amazing. The crowd loved that match. Then you had, which I think was... I think WWE definitely does have to like do booking of like where their matches are where. But you had Shinsuke versus Baron Corbin, which... everybody enjoyed until the end, and even then, people, like, it was an ending that people understood and they could accept, but it's like, you had a good match going, and we wanted more of a finale, which, of course, we'd get a couple days later on SmackDown, but we would have rather had it there. Let's see, what was that? Then you had the women's match, the five-way elimination match, which enjoyed. Lana was over as hell. Everybody was cheering for Lana because, you know, it's Lana. And, I do understand personally why everybody cheers for Lana. And I need you to follow this. The reason is because we see Lana as being against what corporate wants, or what at least the sort of more social justice warrior contingent among the corporate wants. Like, she's everything, you know, she's a super sexy woman. Yeah, she maybe can't wrestle now, but she is improving, and the hope is that she'll definitely get better. And, you know, we want to see, you know, it's great that women's wrestling's here, and we definitely cheer for Bayley and for Sasha and for all of them, but, you know, all of them are athletes. Would it kill to have just one that's just super sexy? It goes into a bigger discussion, which I'm not prepared to have this morning. That's definitely something we'll have for a debate for another time. Maybe next episode I'll make that sort of a thing I talk about at the beginning. Then you had the match that I think actually really, in a way, hurt the pay-per-view because of its ending, and that was AJ Styles versus Kevin Owens for the U.S. title, in which Kevin Owens regained it. And it was a great match. Everybody was into it. But the very strange ending and the fact that you then switch the title back to KO after you do this very super surprise finish at Madison Square Garden where AJ won it, it just left the crowd confused and like, what's going on? People thought it was a botch. And I think that ending took people out of the pay-per-view. And we've talked about this before, sometimes you can have a match that there's so much expectation on it, and then it doesn't live to those expectations, and it becomes a downer for the crowd. I definitely think this was the case with that match, to where you had this great match going, and then it just ends suddenly with what feels like a botched ending. In a finish that just felt very unorganized. It left the crowd confused, and it's like, what? It's one of the things that I think people paid their money to go to that pay-per-view for, or at least when they did pay for the tickets, it's the match they were looking for the most, and they felt ripped off. And, you know, that's when you sort of, the crowd just lost all its energy. And I think that hurt all the matches that then came after it. Because let's see, what came after that? I'm thinking off the top of my head. I believe next was John Cena versus Rusev in the flag match, which, you know, and I've been saying this, you have to give credit to both John Cena and Rusev. They were put into a storyline that didn't make any sense, and nobody liked because it was the third foreigners are bad type of storyline, and it was super cheesy and super stuck in the 1980s, and nobody really wanted that. Like, you can have Rusev be the bad guy, like, but, you know, it doesn't have to be like, I'm a foreigner and you're American and I hate you because you're American and we foreigners are better than you Americans. It could just be like, why can't it just be, I'm better than you, you're never here anymore, and I will crush you. Like, and I guess only did it just to do the flag match, which, one, they should have explained the rules of how they were doing a flag match. I think people would have maybe been more excited for it, because, honestly, if they had done that, I may have been more excited for it. Like, when I heard they're going to do a flag match, the idea is it's whoever takes their flag down first wins, but it was taking the flag down and then taking it up the ramp to some steps to place it in a flag holder. Which is completely different. It's more in the line of like an ambulance match or a stretcher match in that sense then. And if we had known that, maybe people, I think, would be more excited for it. And so you add in all of those negative elements going against it, and then you have the likes of a John Cena and a Rusev, who have great chemistry, making that match way better than it had any right to be. And I think it shows how great of a wrestler both John Cena and Rusev are. And so props to them for having a very great match. A match I certainly enjoyed. And I think the entire crowd really enjoyed. Again, it's just that energy was drained because of the what happened with Styles and Kevin Owens. You then had a very quick match between Sami Zayn and, Michael Kanellis, where Sami Zayn got his win back. That was really set up for as an intermission for people to do that thing before the main event. Of course, there was a sort of a Breezango thing that went down. Again, that's another thing people were looking for, like, oh, they're going to make the finale this paper. Nope, they're going to continue it. Like, God damn it, we're looking forward to that. So you had that, and again, like I said, and crowd was into, like, something, like, I make it sound like the crowd was dead, but, like, Shinsuke Nakamura's song, they sung, the entrances, they were, you know, because those are a lot more easier, but, like, during matches, like, getting chants going, even the Ole Ole chant wasn't as strong as it usually is, and again, for all the reasons I mentioned before about the crowd, I think that hurt it. And then you had the Punjabi prison match between Mahal and Orton. I enjoyed it. I think Mahal's getting better and better and more comfortable in his role. Randy Orton, who's super slick in the ring, but there's just some instances, I think, where it just seems like he's not trying. And their personalities and charismas really clash a lot. So it's like, this is the third time seeing it. We don't really want to see it anymore. It could have done somebody else, but they didn't. So, you had all that going against it. End of the day, I've really enjoyed it. Like I said, I really enjoyed my experience. And I enjoyed the pay-per-view. To me, it's not the worst pay-per-view. I think that's completely overblown. And I think that has a lot more to do with the fact that our expectations of the Kevin Owens AJ Styles match being completely dropped because of that ending. And it took us out of the pay-per-view. I mean, I'm not sitting here and saying it's the best either, by any means. And how come on a Sunday morning everybody's got to goddamn post something about you on Facebook? Goddamn it. It's Sunday morning, go to sleep. I say that at 9:19 in the morning. Because live podcasting is awesome. So I give it a solid 3 out of 5. I will say this, like I said, I enjoy it myself. I definitely want to go to another pay-per-view. I'm sure Royal Rumble's already sold out, but like, if I could get tickets to the Royal Rumble, which is coming back to Philly again, because apparently WWE didn't learn its lesson, or maybe they did. And they'll do it right this year and not piss off the fans. I can always hope, can't I? But I would love to be able to go to Royal Rumble if I could. But, you know, we'll see. And, that's all down the line. And 3 out of 5 for that. I guess next agenda on the list is G1 Climax, literally finished earlier this morning. As I said, before this recording, I watched it before I did the recording, watched the finale. So I'm going to sit here and say this. I'm going to try to do this as quickly as possible. Spoiler alert, if you do not want to be spoiled on the finale, jump 10 minutes ahead. I'm going to try to keep this under 10 minutes. So, spoiler alert, jump 10 minutes ahead if you do not want to be spoiled now. Alright. I did a little pause there because I want to get some time for those to jump ahead. If you're still listening after this, you know, you've been forewarned, you're going to be spoiled. So you cannot hold me accountable for this. Now, mind you, I come as somebody who's not watched all of the G1. I've watched a couple of matches. I'm making my way through all of them, which I want to do because there are a lot of matches I want to see on every night. Toriano's, Ishii's matches, Ibushi's matches, Naito and Tanahashi's matches. So there are a number of matches I do want to see. So I absolutely make my way, and I hope to watch it by the end of this month, all of them. But, you know, the finals, it came up, and so I watched both last night's and the night before matches. And, of course, the finals were this morning. And very much enjoyed that. Omega versus Okada 3 was much better than the past two. I made a quote to Matty J that may be match of the year. That was until this morning, in which Omega and Naito had match of the year. For the most part, the event was good. I kind of skipped through the first couple matches, but I watched Ricochet and Taguchi versus the Young Bucks. That was a fun match. Surprised by the ending of Ricochet and Taguchi winning the titles. But that was a fun moment. And then they were supposed to go to intermission, but nope. Kitsuyori Shibata comes out. Takes a bump in the mat, says, "I'm alive, I'm well," and then leaves. Now, what that means for could he possibly return to wrestling or whatever, nobody knows, but the people were crying. And it was great to see him alive, great to see that he's walking and that he is back. You know, he can obviously take a bump. That's very exciting. It's very good news considering the very scary situation that happened at, I believe it was Sakura Genesis. Where, again, that headbutt, the hemorrhage and his brain and everything, very scary. Everybody's glad that he's alive, that he's walking. That's all amazing. Then you had the tag match for the heavyweight titles, War Machine versus Cody and Hangman Page. And again, it was a fun match, but definitely it was a building win for War Machine. The big news came out of, you know, Guerrillas of Destiny coming out to challenge them when all of a sudden, and mind you, this was obviously a night of big returns. Here came Lance Archer and Dave Smith Jr., son of Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog, a.k.a. the Killer Elite, and attack both Guerrillas of Destiny and War Machine. Says, "We're taking it out. We're going to kill everyone till they're dead." So Lance Archer's back from his injury. The heavyweight title scene is definitely picking up, which, you know, between that and Homaru, the heavyweight title scene featured a lot of injuries that they're now getting recovered from. Then you had Suzuki Gun versus Tana. Suzuki, Zack Sabre Jr., and I'm blanking on the name of the big out-of-control guy, versus Tanahashi, Elgin, and Ibushi, which ended with Zack Sabre Jr. Making Tanahashi tap to a modified octopus hold, obviously setting up a intercontinental match between Zack Sabre Jr. and Tanahashi to be coming at a later date. So that's going to be a program to watch. Again, Zack Sabre just tapped him out in the first night of G1. And then you had Chaos versus LIJ and a 8-man tag, which are Gato tapping out to a triangle hold of Hiromu Takahashi. And again, showing LIJ's dominance right now. I mean, they are just unstoppable. They are the top faction right now. And then you had the main event, Kenny Omega versus Tetsuya Naito. And again, this goes back to my point of, you know, when you look at those first two Okada-Omega matches, again, it's the chemistry in those matches and also the fact that they were being, I think, forced to, like, have these long matches and felt the fill time, so there was a lot of wrist holding and everything. Stuff I've already talked about before. What I'll get at here is there was a lot more action, a lot more movement, a lot more energy. The charisma on Naito is just infectious. You're just glued to the screen to watch what he's going to do. Great chemistry of two sort of dirt-dealing, willing-to-take shortcuts when they need to wrestlers. And the matches kept going on and building and building and building. And right now, honestly, Naito versus Omega, G1 Climax Finals, this is my match of the year right now. Just an absolutely amazing match. Can't gush about it enough, but trying to do it quickly because I want to keep this under 10 minutes. But like, there literally is not enough time. Well, we're going to have to talk about this at a later date. Absolutely outstanding matches. The counter of the power, Omega's power bomb into Hurricane Rana by Naito, amazing. The reverse Rana by him, all the V triggers, all of the Destinos. Like, there was like five of them, like five, and all were like different versions. Finally, Naito was able to put Omega away. Just amazing. Had great chemistry, I thought, and a great win. You know, the thing is, I called this, I think, about a month ago. Like, I said, like, Naito's going to win. It's going to be Naito versus Omega. Naito's going to win because he's the big build-up. I think they are going to keep the title on Okada, and I think it's going to be Okada versus Naito at Wrestle Kingdom. And this is part of, I think, a great building story that I don't think anybody's talking about. Because, again, Naito finally got that big Wrestle Kingdom win last year over Tanahashi. And so he's like, exercise that demon. And so now you have him with the briefcase, finally getting that main event that's been constantly denied him at Wrestle Kingdom. And he's going to face, I think, Okada, who will break the record. And he'll be this, like, who can take the title from Okada? And it's going to be Naito, and it's going to be huge. And watch it. It's a great story. That New Japan, I think, has been building to. And again, it's one of the reasons why New Japan right now is just on fire. You know, they are executing their style of wrestling better than WWE is executing theirs. Now, mind you, I think some of that also has to do with fans being stubborn, personally. I don't think fans are ever giving WWE the benefit of the doubt. And yet you look at, they're complaining about Shinsuke Nakamura, about how they're booking him. Like, he should be booked, you know, people saying he should be booked. Like, WWE is nothing, but like, then what does that say about Ziggler and Baron Corbin and all of the others? No, this WWE, you need to present WWE as this is the best of the best of the best. Maybe not everybody's a Shinsuke Nakamura, but they are more than just some jobber to job to Nakamura. So I've had no problem with the way he's been booked, but a lot of people have. And mind you, other stuff, you know, Raw's on fire right now, SmackDown's on fire right now. I'm looking forward to SummerSlam personally. And so, but like early in the year, they weren't executing their style, and they still have some execution issues that they're dealing with. And, you know, that's the difference between New Japan and WWE. New Japan is executing their style more. By the way, hello all you people possibly returning. Yes, spoilers are over. I won't talk about it that much. Other than, I thought the G1 Climax Finals was absolutely amazing. Not maybe the event of the year, because, again, there were only a few matches, I think, that were really must-watched. Some of the others had more story-building in them. But, you know, the shocking returns. There's a sort of preview for you to maybe go watch it now. The IWGP Tag Team Junior Tag Team Title match was fun to watch. And then, of course, that finals, absolutely amazing. So definitely go watch the 2017 G1 Climax Finals if you have New Japan World. But we are, we are actually almost, by my recording standards, almost 40 minutes in. And, so I'm going to take a quick break. And when we come back, after playing some promos for some friends of mine, we're going to come back and we are going to get into SummerSlam 1994.
Have you ever read a Superman comic?
Not in the last few hours.
Oh, I was just checking, right? Just checking.
Hey, everyone. My name is Michael Bailey, and I have been a fan of Superman for as long as I can remember. In 1987, I started collecting the Superman comics as a going concern, which led me down a long and winding comic book-filled path to 2007, when I first started podcasting. Well, it's 2017, and because it's been 10 years since I started podcasting, and 30 years since I started reading Superman full-time, I thought it might be fun to start a new show called It All Comes Back to Superman. It All Comes Back to Superman will be my monthly reaffirmation of my Kryptonian faith, where I will pick out something about the Man of Steel and discuss it. Sometimes I'll be alone. Sometimes I'll have a guest. No matter how many people get involved, Superman will be the focus. It All Comes Back to Superman as part of the Fortress of Bailey Tube Podcasting Network. New episodes will drop on the 28th of every month. This show and all of the other programs that are part of the Fortress of Bailey Tude Podcasting Network can be found at www.fortressofbaileytude.com.
Batman Nightcast, a thrilling new podcast from the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Hosted by Ryan Daly
and Chris Franklin, Nightcast chronicles the Caped Crusaders' adventures in Batman and Detective Comics after Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Highlights from this legendary era include
Batman number 400,
Legends,
Mike Barr and Alan Davis,
Batman Year 1,
Batman Year 2,
Max Allen Collins, the new Jason Todd, Millennium?
You're not doing this right, let me take over. Alan Grant and Norm Breyfogle!
Alan Grant from Jurassic Park?
Did you hear me say Norm freaking Breyfogle?
Oh, yeah.
Son of the Demon.
The Killing Joke.
A Death in the Family.
Batman Year 3.
A Lonely Place of Dying.
Alan Grant, Alan Davis, Max Allen Collins. Why are there so many people named Alan from this era of Batman?
The Rise of Tim Drake.
Legends of the Dark Knight.
And that's just up until 1989.
Did anything exciting happen with Batman after that?
You'll have to tune in to find out.
Batman Nightcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Find it on iTunes and at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Oh, we forgot to mention your favorite issue, when Batman fires Dick Grayson.
You want to find another co-host?
Welcome back, and let's go over our rundown of SummerSlam 1994, which had the tagline of "So hot, it's scary." Because mostly on the posters they had the two Undertakers. But SummerSlam 1994 by WWE sponsored by Domino's Pizza, took place on August 29th, 1994, to an attendance of 23,000 at the newly opened United Center in Chicago, Illinois. And I do believe, and again, I need to double check this fact, I don't know if there have been Raws at the United Center, but this, I believe, is the only pay-per-view event. Mind you, I'm getting my fact from What Culture Wrestling. That apparently has happened at the United Center. All others have happened at the Rosemont Horizon. I don't think anybody really knows why either. Your color commentators for the evening are Vincent Kennedy McMahon and Jerry the King Lawler. And, you know, let's get into it. You also had special guest Liam Nelson, from the Naked Gun and Airplane, trying to solve the mystery of the Undertaker with little vignettes and another thing that happens, but it's not really important here. We did have one dark match that happened before the show. Atom Bomb defeated Kwang. There's really no time for it, but that happened. Before I get started, I also do, you know, as we know, we're all one big wrestling community. I do want to give a shout out to What Culture Wrestling, their lists that they've been doing. They did it for WrestleMania. They did it for King of the Ring, and they've been doing it for SummerSlam, and I'm sure they're going to do it for Survivor Series as well. You know, 10 interesting facts about this pay-per-view. So, has informed me on some very interesting thing about a lot of these pay-per-views. Of course, the whole deal with Razor and Shawn winning the titles literally days before the event, which caused the opening match not to be for the WWF at the time tag team titles. And, you know, all how different people viewed that. Shawn convincing Vince on an idea, but everybody looking at it is like, this is the power of the click. But our first match was Iwan R. Seister, a.k.a. IRS, and Bam Bam Bigelow with their manager Ted DiBiase as part of the Million Dollar Corporation, facing the head shrinkers of Fatu and Samu with Alpha and Lou Albano. IRS and Bam Bam won by disqualification. This was a fun match. Looked like the head shrinkers were in a lot more control through most of the match. But yeah, the ending of the match, unfortunately, very much reeks of they had to quickly just change. They didn't want to give him a pin. They want to give him a win, but they didn't want to give him a pinfall. I don't know why, but yeah, because again, like I said, IRS and Bam Bam were planned to win the titles, but then again, those plans changed. So yeah, the fact that plans changed really reeks with this match. But for the most part, it was a, I think, all but fun opening match for what it is. But it was the next match that was really outstanding. You had Alundra Blaze defending her WWF Women's Championship against Bull Nakano with her manager, Luna Falcon. This was a really fun match. Really enjoyed it. Really, this is my first true viewing of Bull Nakano. Like, I had heard of her. I think I quasi-remember when she was in WCW for a little bit. But I really don't have any real memories of really watching any matches with her. Of course, you hear so much about her, you know, she's famed in Japanese women wrestling. But this is really, I think, like, I feel like my real first time really watching her. And I really enjoyed how she uses her power and her look and everything. I thought that was great. And her and Alundra Blaze had a really outstanding match, I thought. Again, it was given, I think, a fair amount of time for this time period in wrestling. Because most matches on the undercard, except for major championship matches, don't go longer than 10 minutes.
you know, and like, for instance, the card, all but two matches go longer than 10 minutes. The only two were the Intercontinental Championship match, which went 15 minutes, so really only 5 minutes longer, and the World Heavyweight Championship match, which went 32 minutes and 22 seconds. So, to me, I see it as they were given a fair amount of time during a time where, you know, most matches on the undercard weren't given more than 10 minutes. But very fast-paced, very enjoyable, great wrestling from both Blaze and Nakano. Very much enjoyed it. Also, a really good match for the Women's Championship. It's really too bad that, you know, she left and it soured people on the women's division. And again, I mean, while Blaze and Nakano are good, I don't know if they really had the type of women they needed for the division. And of course, but thankfully later women that came into WWE would, you know, revive the division. That great match has actually followed what I felt was a very enjoyable match for the WWF Intercontinental Championship. As we said, went 15 minutes, 3 seconds. You had Razor Ramon with Walter Payton versus Diesel with Shawn Michaels. Again, very interesting that, you know, this is starting to set up the whole breakup angle with Shawn and Diesel. Because, again, you have Shawn Michaels ultimately costing Diesel a match by accidentally super-kicking him when she was trying to aim... when he was trying to aim for Razor. But for the most part, I think, you know, again, you have Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, two friends. I think they have great chemistry. They work really, really well together. So that was... made it a very much more enjoyable match. I think Walter Payton worked well in his role of being sort of the corner man for Razor. Not that he did much, but again, the chasing of Shawn towards the end, which led, I think, storyline-wise, led Shawn coming late to try to interfere and kick Razor, which gave Razor enough time to get his wits so that he could dodge and have him kick Kevin and then pick up the win. Again, those sort of... the story that they are telling in the match, because throughout the match, Shawn was helping Kevin, helping Diesel, excuse me. And, yeah. So I thought all that worked really, really well. And your new Intercontinental Champion, Razor Ramon, the bad guy. So that's a very enjoyable match. Then you had Lex Luger versus Tanaka, which, I know there was a constant changing going on there. I think it was a couple things, but yeah, it's not really memorable. It's an okay match. The same, by the way, can be said for basically this match and Jeff Jarrett versus Mabel. Jabel defeats Mabel, and Tanaka defeats Luger. The really only difference is that the Tanaka and Luger was part of a storyline involving the Million Dollar Corporation, and it saw Tanaka turning heel after the match, beating down Lex Luger and joining the corporation. But both matches were, let's call them what they were. They were piss breaks. It was time for them, or they were there so that people could go to the concession stands, go to the bathrooms, for the two main events which are coming up, because they're not really memorable. And, like, honestly, I feel you could skip both these matches if you're watching this event. I mean, Tanaka and Luger had okay chemistry, but, again, it just wasn't feeling it. And Jarrett and Mabel was just... of course, the story behind there is I think Jabel's supposed to face Doink, and something happened. There's no real reason why it changed, but they changed it to Mabel for no real reason. And again, you know, this is like, you know, the first match where, you know, the ending felt like it was last minute. Both these matches felt like they were put together last minute, and they just to fill out the card. Then you had, without a doubt, match of the night. The steel cage match of Owen Hart versus Bret Hart for the WWF World Heavyweight Championship, which finds Bret Hart retaining in spectacular fashion, climbing out of the cage, him and his brother racing down, his Owen, you know, getting caught, or his foot caught in the steel cage and hanging upside down as Bret jumps off and, you know, touches the ground, winning the match. But yeah, I just thought it was amazing. Again, I've heard so many people talk about this as one of the best steel cage matches of all time. I've never, ever gotten to see it. And this is my first time seeing it. I definitely now understand why people say that it's one of the best steel cages of all time. Constant action, great psychology, just got, you know, Owen and Bret going full throttle. They hit a move. They try to escape the cage. Again, if the only way to win is escape, why are you going to... I guess that's the only thing that... I'm kind of on the norm... On the, I'm crossed between it. You know, because... In one hand, I think all makes perfect sense. You know, they have this feud. Owens wants to be seen as better than Bret. What better way than be champion? So going after... Going constantly to escape makes sense. But at the same time, this is supposed to also be this, you know, almost blood feud of, like, Owen hates Bret because they all see that he's... Everybody thinks that he's better. That Bret's better than him, and he doesn't think that. And, you know, decided that he wants to cause pain to Bret, you know. In that case, again, I'm not saying it doesn't make sense. What I'm saying is the one criticism I have of this match is I think there could have been, you know, a couple more minutes spent. And what I mean by this is they had like 3,900 escape attempts between the two of them. Maybe Owen could have, like, not tried to escape and tried to cause a bit more damage and, like, spent a couple minutes. Because they, like I said, they were given 32 minutes, but maybe, like, given 5 minutes of just constantly, or maybe 5 minutes more of constantly just trying to wear Bret down and hurt him, I think could have, like, just actually made it better. But there's really not, like, I'm trying to find something to be critical about. Like, it's damn near almost perfect. It's Owen, it's Bret, constant action, two of the very best at this time, the two best in the industry at the time, wrestling each other. They have great chemistry. Even though I already knew what happened, because, you know, again, you see all the clips and everything, it's still very suspenseful throughout the match. Great psychology. So, absolutely fun match to watch. And it's really the match worth watching on this pay-per-view, without a shadow of a doubt. So, absolutely suspenseful match. And it goes over the storyline stuff that happens after the match. Jim Neidhart. I was blanking on his name for a moment, but Jim Neidhart comes and clotheslines. I'm blanking on names. British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith, who goes over the rail with his wife, which apparently wasn't supposed to happen, and Bret was furious at because it was only supposed to be Davey Boy. But that happened, and of course, Jim attacking Bret with Owen, them throwing him back in a cage, locking the cage, and keeping Davey Boy and some of the other Harts out as they were trying to climb the cage, as they were beating the hell out of Bret. All that storyline, and I mean, I'll have to watch further to see if that was really evolved into something, but again, all that storyline, I really liked. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this match. And last but not least, then we have what was the main event. And I get what... It was the main event, because, you know, Undertaker was a big character, and you have him returning after, like, let's see, end of January, so February, March, April, May, June, July, August, so he's gone for 7 months. That's a big return, considered a big part of the company. But I also understand the standpoint of maybe the steel cage match should have been the main event and should have been at the end. I mean, I understand both points of view, but the pay-per-view was really centered around through the advertising and everything, the return of the Undertaker, and this match between the real Undertaker with Paul Bearer and what everybody knew as sort of the fake Undertaker, which was played by Brian Lee, who, again, you might remember more as Chains, who is part of Ted DiBiase and his Million Dollar Corporation. It's the Undertaker that, I guess, DiBiase found and raised the power of money. The match was good. Brian Lee, I think, did a great job personally of sort of imitating Undertaker's moveset, but at the same time making it look obvious enough that, like, this really isn't Taker. He's doing Undertaker, but he's not really Taker. And then, of course, there is no one like Taker. And, again, the character work here, I think, is very good. And, you know, I very much enjoyed the match. This was definitely much more storyline. I mean, the match felt longer, but that had a lot more to do with the entrances and all of the cinematic and theatrics of the entrances and the theatrics that happened after the match was over. But the match itself, again, it was a good match. It was a match in which it was very obvious who was the real Undertaker, and it was just a matter of time. But again, still had enough shoe to it to, I think, be, for the most part, very enjoyable. And I personally enjoyed it. I loved, like I said, I did like the theatrics and all this stuff. It felt longer than it was. And again, I think it also has to do with, again, some people felt that it shouldn't have been the main event. And so you have that going into how people feel about the match. But for the most part, I thought it was enjoyable. And fun. So that's it for the review. So let's do our usual thing. We'll go over top moments, top matches, and then I'll get my final rating. Top three moments. The ending to Razor versus Diesel with Sean super kicking Diesel. I thought that very shocking way to end that match. Number two was the Undertaker's entrance, the return, all the theatrics to that. Very enjoyable with the big overly big urn that Paul Bearer had that was shooting out light and everything, and all of the theatrics with his return, that was just amazing in my point of view. I really enjoyed it. And then you had Brett's, the winning moments of the cage match where Brett and Owen are fighting on the cage, on the outside of the cage, and it's like, who's just one drop and they'll win, and it's, and Owen's trying to climb down, but his foot gets caught and it allows his brother to drop down and his feet to hit first. That was definitely my favorite one because it was a great ending to a great match. It's for that point, I that was my top moment. The ending of that cage match with Owen getting his foot caught and Brett being able to climb down to win it. Top three matches. Number three, Razor versus Diesel, which is a fun match. Number two, Alundra Blaze versus Bull Nakano. Really good match. Really worth watching. And then, of course, as I mentioned, match of the night was definitely the cage match, Brett versus Owen. It's worth watching this pay-per-view alone. It's just for that match. But all three are definitely worth watching. And I would say even the Undertaker versus Undertaker match is worth watching. So you had four solid matches worth watching. Three that are really an indication of, like, last-minute decisions and everything. It's not a super exciting SummerSlam for that reason. Like, there are, like, a couple of matches that are obviously put together last minute. Like, I mean, you had the opening match, the tag match, which plans changed because the titles were taking off the head shrinkers, and it showed. Then you had the two matches sort of in between the Intercontinental match and the heavyweight title match, which just felt thrown together. And again, it's like, well, we got 20 minutes, or actually really, yeah, about 20 minutes when you include entrances and everything to, you know, go to the bathroom and get food and stuff. But again, the two main events in particular, the steel cage match, just all of the storylines involved in that and everything, which, that's the other thing. WWE did a great job in telling backstory. So even though I've read about what has happened, but even though I don't really have memory of it, I understood what all the stories were going into all of the matches, because WWE did a great job telling that backstory. Again, though, it's not a super, it's not a huge card. It's only 7 matches. And like I said, there are a couple matches that are just like, yeah, these are just, I hate to call them piss breaks, but they just feel like piss breaks. And, you know, it's why it's not a super, I don't want to call, say, super memorized SummerSlam, because everybody remembers the cage match. Everybody remembers the Undertaker's match because they remember that storyline. And, you know, I think those two are really the reason why most people even think about this SummerSlam. So you have some stuff against it, but you have some outstanding matches that I think are very much overlooked. So, in my mind, SummerSlam 1994 gets a 3 out of 5. It's solid because it has several solid matches, but there are certainly some matches you can skip. But I definitely think it's a pay-per-view you should watch for the Bret versus Owen steel cage match, for the finale of the Undertaker storyline, where it's Undertaker returning full-time, the Intercontinental match between Razor and Diesel are definitely worth watching. And, you know, again, it's a great look at what the women's division was at with the two best going at it between Blaze and Nakano. And, Nakano. So, 3 out of 5 from me. By the way, Hairball, if you're listening to this, it's 10 in the morning. Why are you up? Why must everybody bother me when I'm podcasting? Ah! So, 3 out of 5 for me. And that is it for CMJU's Wrestling Reviews. I hope you definitely enjoyed it. I know I'm glad to be back. I have 2 more SummerSlams that I hope to at least get reviews out. So the next couple reviews, next episode, I hope to take a look at SummerSlam 1997 Heart and Soul. That's, of course, Stone Cold versus Owen. So we're going to have the interesting talk about, you know, the unfortunate situations with that match. And, of course, Bret versus Taker, which I hope certainly is going to be a better match than the Bret versus Taker match from, Royal Rumble 1995, which I think I reviewed earlier this year. So that's coming up. And then the final SummerSlam that I at least hope to review is going to be SummerSlam 2002, where we're going to see Shawn versus Triple H unsanctioned match. And, of course, Brock Lesnar ascending his throne, beating The Rock. So that is the hopeful outlook for upcoming CMJUs. And, of course, we're definitely going to have a review of everything that's coming up on the weekend of the 21st and 22nd, 23rd. Because, you know, that weekend you got NXT, Brooklyn, you've got SummerSlam 2017. That's definitely going to be one review. And mind you, also, again, that weekend, or at least following that, you have the final days of the What Culture Pro Wrestling World Cup of Wrestling. That's certainly going to probably be talked about the following episodes. There's so much great wrestling happening this month. You also have the Mae Young Classic happening. The first four episodes going, I think, the Monday after SummerSlam. So that's all coming to a head. So that great women's tournament that everybody is talking about. All that and more. On upcoming episodes of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. So that is it for this episode, episode 80 of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. And until next time, remember, I'm the most glorious Jew that ever lived. And you're wrestling savior, and you can't teach that. Why? Because I'm CM Jew. Recognize!
You're all that I have, and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, I bring me down to negative vibes. But I believe, yes, I believe, I said I believe. I stand on my feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out the darkness comes light, twilight and to the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my might. What's this feeling, my love will be all in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God, songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holding in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want.